Hi, and welcome to the Happy Project Podcast. I am Becky, and I'm one of the hosts of this podcast. And if you didn't know, the co-host is Cedric Skysetti. And, well, a little fun fact, we are actually an engaged couple. And like any other couple in a healthy relationship, we are constantly in discussions about how our relationship works. Communication, friends, that is key. And though both of us are half Korean, I am half white, he's half black, and so we bring our own set of experiences that we have from our respective other sides and also the experiences that we had growing up in our mixed Korean homes. So this time around, we thought we'd talk about what we think are important discussions to be had if you yourself are in a multicultural or interracial relationship. Listen.
What am I hearing? Listening to what?
You know, you're listening to...
Yeah. 온열 이야기입니다. 온열 이야기.
Oh, it is.
The Happy Project.
The Happy Project Podcast.
Yeah. What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to The Happy Project. Today, we thought we'd let you in on just many of the conversations that Becky and I have together. You know, we're both half Korean, of course, and we have a lot of these cultural type of discussions naturally, just in our conversation. So we wanted to give you a little sneak peek into what we discuss. Maybe you can get value out of it. And today, we thought we'd talk about the things to think about if you're thinking about getting into an interracial or international relationship, or if you're in one right now, because we think it's really important. And there are a lot of things to consider that I think, you know, at the onset, you don't really think about.
No, obviously because, you know, when you're first starting a relationship with someone, hopefully the first thing that you see is the other person. Like ultimately, right? You decide to get in a relationship with someone because you love that person, not how exactly they look or what country they're from, right? You hopefully love the person. But all of those other things, like culture and where you're from and what you look like, do play a part in what your life can become later on.
Yeah.
You know, some things you have to actually think about.
Exactly. So we don't want anyone out there to be blinded by love.
Yeah, they're blinded.
I was waiting to say that.
Were you preparing this?
Yeah.
He was writing it in his notebook.
So we're just going to have a conversation with one another. We're going to be talking to you guys too. And we'll just see what we talk about.
Yeah, I mean, we got to really, like, so we do read some of the comments on the YouTube channels.
All of the comments.
YouTube channel. And there was one I really appreciated that had said, like, you know, I am in a relationship with a Korean woman. I am not Korean. And he was saying, like, I know so many people around me who just jump into relationships with Koreans without thinking about some of the ramifications of that,
mm-hmm.
or how something it might impact their life, and they just jump into it. And he says, I really wouldn't blame people for hesitating a little bit, or, you know, taking a moment before you actually get into a serious relationship with someone who is not of your culture or race. And I think that's a very wise thing to say, and it reflects a lot of what we talk about too. This video, by the way, is not to discourage people from
not
getting into interracial or international.
We wouldn't be here if that was the case.
Exactly right. But it is just, you know, just be wise and have a mm-hmm. clear eye about everything.
What's like the first thing that you, I guess, think about when it comes to maybe two people from different cultural and ethnic and or racial like backgrounds when they want to consider getting together? You know, they're falling in love, they're hanging out. What's like the first thing that you think of?
Language.
Ooh.
Right? Because, I mean, you kind of hope that you can communicate with each other. Definitely, I know of relationships that have worked out where you didn't share a mutual language
mm-hmm.
at the very beginning. And then, you know, over time, one person learned the other person's language, or they had a third language that they eventually became more fluent in so that they could communicate better. We've definitely witnessed those kind of relationships.
Yeah, we have some close friends like that, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I just... All I do know, however, is that language is very vital when it comes to communication. And communication is the cornerstone of a healthy relationship. So if you are unable to communicate well or unwilling to be flexible in how you communicate your thoughts, then you might be up for some very serious challenges down the road.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think a lot of times people are like they're willing to overlook language differences, especially in the
right.
beginning, because you have all of the feelings and the dopamines all, you
yeah,
know,
and
rushing
you're just
in
looking
your brain.
At them, you're like, oh, you're so cute.
Yeah. But, you know, I think that is something, the importance of language becomes a little bit more apparent, especially as you get deeper into a relationship. Mm. And that's where a lot of the challenges will start to arise from what I've noticed. Because in the beginning, you're sort of overlooking things and you're being very generous with one another.
Yes.
And so it can be a challenge. Now, I will say, like, in the example of, like, my parents, my dad's African-American, my mom's Korean, my mom has been in the States for about 40 years-ish. Yeah, about 40 years now, a little more than 40 years. And she's still not super fluent in English. Mm-hmm. And my dad, who is no longer with us now, but when he was here, you know, they had a great relationship, but they were very limited in how they can communicate.
He didn't speak Korean.
Yeah, right? My dad didn't speak Korean at all. He probably knew a few words, you know. But they made it work. But I would say, like, from every, like, all of my friends, because I know a lot of, you know, friends whose parents are, you know, international couples, my parents seem to be the exception to that. Mm. You know what I mean? In terms of how well their relationship worked. I mean, they figured out a way to communicate to each other in a way that they were able to understand each other. And it was primarily through English, and my mom really, you know, did more of the giving. But yeah, that's the exception, I think, in the case of my parents.
It is the exception, yeah.
Yeah, so that's the other thing is, like, a lot of times in relationships, one person might be giving a little bit more or sacrificing more on the language end.
In all relationships, we talk about compromise. We talk about sacrifice. Somebody is always going to have to give and take at some point or another, and you would hope that you would never begrudge yourself or your partner for having to do that. But it seems that when you have a relationship where language is a significant barrier, then yes, somebody is going to have to sacrifice quite a lot in order to get this communication to work with each other. And so I think that sometimes we take it for granted, right? Just that, it's similar to when you're trying to teach somebody your native language and they ask, well, why does it mean that? And you say, well, that's just how it is. That's just how the language is. Because you don't actually actively think about the effort required to understand and explain what something means if you're just very native and fluent in that language, right? And so that happens just on a literal day-to-day basis, mundane conversations that happen every single day that are the basis of building a healthy, good communication between you.
Right.
So you have to be willing to go through those stumbling blocks, and you have to be willing to be patient with each other, and you also have to be willing to change maybe the way you communicate in order to get the main point across, right?
Sure, yeah. But if language is not an issue, right? Let's just say communication is not really an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Another consideration, and this is maybe high level, is food. Mm-hmm. But it runs deep because, like, depending on the culture, like, food can be, like, a very huge part of their culture, their comfort, and how they relate to life. I know that my mom needs to have her Korean food. She lives in America. She's able to cook her own food. But we would go out to, like, restaurants and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
As a family, occasionally, growing up, and my mom would eat at the restaurant, it would be good, and then she'd come home and she'd still need to eat her Korean food, you know? And I think it's, you know, because especially in the Korean culture, the food is very closely tied to the individual and the feeling of being part of, you know, Korean.
Yeah, part of the community. I'm not entirely sure about all countries around the world, but in the case of Korea, food is very closely tied to also community, right? And you share food together, you pass down food to other people, you bring food, you always eat together.
Mm-hmm.
And so food is pretty central to a lot of, like, social events, right? And connection. And so if food is not just a form of sustenance, but also symbolic of your cultural togetherness, when one person in your family or in your partnership does not embrace that food, does not want to eat that food, it can feel almost like you don't want to be part of us. Like you don't want to be
That's
part of this.
That's a good point, yeah.
Right? And I've seen a lot of relationships where one parent or one person in the couple does not want to eat the food of the other person.
Right.
Right?
It's usually because they just don't like it.
They
it's usually
like
not
it.
Because they're being a jerk or anything.
Yeah, or they're just not used to
hope.
It. I would hope too, right? You should always be willing to try something new. Yeah, and that can create an extra burden, especially if the person who is making the food has to make two separate dishes. And then your family, if you have kids, sometimes it gets split, right? Oh, this kid also, they don't like kimchi, they don't like kimbap, they don't like Korean food. So then, and I honestly think it can sometimes build resentment if you get the feeling of you're not even willing to try, right? So this is why food, it might feel kind of small, but in reality, it's a very big part of life and a big part of culture. And at the very least, at the very bottom level, you should be willing to try the foods. There's this saying, of course, that when you get married or together, it is not marrying an individual, it is marrying their family.
Ooh.
And so this also becomes a very serious thing if you are married into a culture where family is very, very significant.
Mm-hmm.
And part of you might be feeling a little scared about that. Part of you might be thinking, oh, whatever, I can just brush it off. We are the only partners. And then part of you might not even be aware of just how big and far that can go. And when it comes to family, and I guess we're not talking about your immediate family. We're talking more like your partner's family, right?
Right.
And vice versa. Are you guys going to be able to get along? Are their points of views going to be able to match with your points of views and how you want to live your life and raise your families? Also, what plays a part in that is where you are, right?
Mm-hmm.
So your partner's family might be in Korea. Your family might be in Canada. What about your kids? Are they going to see their cousins? Are they ever going to see their grandparents? So those are things that I think it's really important to consider. If you have, you know, the space and ability to do that, and if you want to have a healthy relationship with either sides of your family.
Even considering your own family and how they would perceive your significant other can be big. You know, there are some families that might be just outright racist. Or maybe not racist. They could be ignorant. You know, there are a lot of different like situations. And so it's just very important on how you and your partner will decide to handle that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not a believer in like necessarily like if your family doesn't agree, then don't do it. I think there are plenty of cases where it has worked in the case of like my parents too. I just think it's just something to consider and it's very important on how you handle it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because like, you know, my dad was very mature in how he handled my grandmother or my Harmony, and he was very loving to her. I'm sure it was tough, you know, especially when she would call him names. So, I don't know. I just think that is something that you and your partner probably should talk about.
That's probably the most key thing. You cannot change how your family thinks. You cannot change the way that they view your partner. And no matter how many times you say, like, don't talk about them that way. That's not who they really are. You don't know. No matter how many times you say that, people don't really change that way. But what the reason why the burden is strongest on you then in this case is it's because you are the one that has to figure out how to handle this. And you got to think to yourself, can I handle this? Could I handle 10, 15 years of my mother saying terrible things about my partner? Can I handle that? I think it can really cause a lot of fractures inside a family. If you are not able to be mature enough or considerate, compassionate enough to be able to deal with that. And so it's not really just about your partnership anymore when family gets involved. It's also about the families. And that does carry down if you ever end up having kids.
To go a little deeper, right, is you have family, but what about your own family? You
want
to have your own family, you know, and this isn't everybody, but if you want to have kids in the future, you know, your kids are going to be either, you know, well, they'll be mixed race, you know, for one, or at least mixed ethnicities or multicultural in some way. And so I think it's just important to talk about with your partner, like, how do you want to move forward in raising your kids?
Right.
I'm, you know, some people are very much against like having mixed kids from a standpoint of like fear, I think, like fear of how the kids will be raised or fear of how the kids will be treated and looked at. I'm not one of those. I do think that is a valid concern depending on the context, but, you know, I'm all for, you know, you know, having like multicultural like households. It's just a matter of like, how do you want to raise your kids?
Yeah.
What kind of environment or atmosphere do you want your kids to grow up in?
Yes.
And, you know, geographical location can also be a consideration.
This is not a statement of have multicultural families for the sake of having multicultural families. It's about if you're having a multicultural family because you love each other and you want to have children, then just being wise about how are we going to pass on our culture? Mm-hmm. Or do we want to? What aspects do we want our kids to understand about themselves? Because culture is passed down. It's taught. Mm-hmm. It's absorbed through your surroundings. And if your child is of two cultures and two heritages, it's up to you as parents to kind of be like, all right, as a young kid, you know, what part of our life do we want to pass down to you? What part of your heritage do we want to celebrate? And I really do think it starts with the parents, to be honest. Mm. And then after that is your outside community. Where are your kids going to be hanging out? Who are their friends? Where are they going to school? Where do you guys live? What languages do their friends speak? And do their kids, your kids relate to that? All of those factors. Sounds like a lot, right? It does feel almost like...
I mean, it is a lot.
We're throwing a lot at you. Yeah. But I think it's coming from the point of view of we're kind of from a generation and some generations before us where the parents didn't think about that at all.
Right.
And now we are dealing with the ramifications of that.
Right.
That's kind of why we have the Happy Project.
That's true. Right. Because, you know, I guess I take for granted that people just think about this or know it. But like the older that I get and the more people I talk to, especially through the Happy Project and the more stories you hear, you realize like in the household, you don't really talk about race or culture, right? It's just kind of a given, you know, mom's Korean, dad's American, mm-hmm. and you just live the life the way you do. And I think that's fine, but also at the same time, you could be blindsided by issues in the future, like the kids when they grow up. And it's like, yeah, you know, I've never really thought about how I look at myself or how I identify or like what to do when someone, you know, makes fun of me in school. Yeah, I think these are things that should be discussed. I mean, you got to.
Right.
And it's not all like negative. It's just like figuring out how do we want, you know, our kids to be exposed? How do we want them to view themselves? Mm. You know, I was very fortunate to have like my father who was very instrumental in me instilling confidence in just being me, mm-hmm. right? Being Black and Korean and owning it, you know, no matter what people think. Mm-hmm. So I think that is very important. So yeah, just figuring out how you want to expose your kids, where you want to raise your kids. And it could be a very positive experience for them for sure.
I think just a very simple example, because again, it can feel kind of overwhelming because there's so much that we're talking about, but just a very simple example. Language. So you have previous generations, maybe you have a Korean mother, an American father, and they have immigrated to the US, or they live in the US and then they have mixed kids who are growing up in the US. And at the time, you know, it was very common for the parents to be like, oh, our kids are in America, you speak English, you don't learn Korean, don't even bother. Or you don't want them to learn Korean. Or it was just very difficult because there were no Koreans around you. And so from the parents' point of view, maybe it doesn't even matter because now we're in the US. But as that kid grows older, you feel a sense of lack of barrier between you and connecting with Korean culture because language is so significant. And that can just feel like a small thing. Oh, we're growing up in the US, speak English. But later on in life, that could be a huge hurdle for your kid to have to deal with if they want to reconnect with Korean heritage. So this is what I mean by culture being passed down and things to really think about as a parent, because especially language is easier to learn as a child, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that is just a great example of one way of making things a little bit easier for the next generation if you do end up having children.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I have been seeing a shift, generally speaking, like from older generations, like my generation of growing up. You know, I was part of the whole, like we just mainly speak English. My mom spoke Korean to me and my sister growing up, but we weren't speaking to her in Korean. Mm-hmm. So we weren't expected to like, you know, communicate in Korean necessarily. But I feel like nowadays, a lot of the parents of multicultural like children and relationships, they want to instill like both of their languages or however many languages into their kids. And I think that is such a great shift of mindset because, you know, I was one of the ones when I got older, I felt that lack. I felt like, oh, I can't communicate. I still feel like that, you know? So I think that is something to just think about when you have kids. How do you want to raise them up language-wise?
Yeah. This is no way to blame older generations either.
Mm-hmm.
If
not
your
at all.
Parents, you know, you felt like, oh, they didn't teach me or whatever, this is by no means to blame couples who have lived at times before us, because there was no handbook, you know, on how to be in an interracial and international marriage. There still is none today. We just happen to have a wider, let's say, like, we're able to view more different types of couples and families around the world, and we gather information and make our decisions based on that. And the Happy Project is just one of those channels that are doing something similar in that way.
Right.
So definitely we don't blame people who weren't either capable of passing on culture to their kids or just never even thought about it. But we do acknowledge that there have been ramifications of that, and we just hope that it can shift a little bit for the positive in the future. Is that very diplomatic?
That is. That's true.
Yeah.
That's a good one. All right. Well, let's bring up one more, I think, consideration.
Okay.
I guess it would be empathy in the relationship.
Yes, empathy.
So obviously empathy, or maybe not so obvious if you don't know what empathy truly is, it's like being able to put yourself in your partner's shoes, being able to see and feel, you know, what they feel, like just putting yourself in their shoes, essentially. In order for any relationship to work, whether interracial or not, you know, there needs to be a sense of empathy. And that's something that I am working on myself.
Why? Why do you say it like that?
I'm just saying it's hard sometimes. But think how much more difficult it might be. Like if you're in an international or interracial relationship and there's like things that you just don't understand. So I think it's just important to just to lead in, you know, a relationship with that understanding and that, you know, whether it's spoken or unspoken, like I'm going to try to understand the other side. I'm going to try to understand why this might make my partner tick.
Right.
Whereas for me, it's not an issue. Right.
But it even goes farther beyond that, because that happens with all couples.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, in things that literally cannot be changed about you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say, great example, your race. And let's say, because I've seen this example many, 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 many times before, you have a friend, and I'll use an example of a friend, because this is, you know, what I've personally seen. I had a black friend in Korea, and she had long hair, and she would often wear it in braids.
Mm-hmm.
And people on the subway were so interested, they would want to touch her hair. They would look at her. They would be like, oh my gosh, and want to talk about it and touch her skin and all this stuff. And from my point of view, I could say, like, yeah, it's a little invasive, but they're interested in you. They think you're beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
They've never seen a person who looks like you before. So in that case, you should just appreciate, even though it's ignorant, it's okay they're being kind about it. But from her point of view, that's very annoying.
Right.
And it's happening everywhere you go in every single situation. If I lacked empathy, I could just continue to push my point and say, like, it's no big deal. But that would, in the end, drive a wedge between us.
Mm-hmm.
Because she would feel like, you don't understand my side. And I think this can happen a lot with if you have a partner who doesn't look anything like you or like your people and in your surroundings.
Mm-hmm.
Are you empathetic enough to pull out from your point of view, which is, it's okay, we've just never encountered people like you. It's fine. It's not a big deal. Versus, oh, this must be very frustrating and annoying. Maybe I can be an advocate for you. Right?
Yeah. And you're actually really good with that. Because like when we were living in Korea, you know, at the time, I think I had a lot of those feelings of like, why do I keep getting stares? Or why do they keep speaking English to me even though I'm speaking Korean to them? And you were very empathetic, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, that must be frustrating. You know,
really?
So.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, yeah. So that is a perfect example. Well, she is a perfect example. So yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah.
And I think empathy will definitely go a long way in just helping. I mean, the relationship would just be a lot healthier.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think...
Because whoever your struggle is, it should be my struggle too.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Once you're that partnership, you share those things. It is not like, oh, that's your issue because you are this country person or this ethnicity or you look like this. It's not about that anymore because now you are together.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And do you have the empathy to be able to open your mind past your own worldview borders to be able to embrace someone else's?
Thanks for listening. If you ever want to write in or you have questions or topics that you'd like to hear us talk about, you can always write in at hello@thehaffyproject.com. And of course, subscribe to this podcast, leave us a review, follow us on YouTube as well as subscribe to our newsletter on haffyproject.com. Thanks for listening. We are The Haffy Project.